treasure. If you are ready to lead with creativity, integrity, and vision, we want to hear from you. To apply or learn more, visit HR@pacifica.org.
What's it do if you're approached by the police?
We deserve to be safe in our neighborhoods.
Follow these tips to assert your rights.
If you're being stopped, detained, or arrested, the best thing to say is nothing.
Stick to only these questions. Am I free to go? If stopped by law enforcement, try to leave the conversation as quickly and safely as possible.
Ask, am I free to go?
If yes, walk away calmly and quietly. Running away could give them pretext to detain you. Officers may try an incited reaction. Ignore them. Knowing your rights is a great first step.
And asserting your rights is even better.
Hello, I'm David Whetstone, and you're listening to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Good morning. This is Chuck Modiano on To Heal DC. I know I do not sound like Joni Eisenberg, and I'm here to tell you Joni Eisenberg will be back next week. So I'm pinch hitting. For those who don't know, we're WPFW at your home for jazz and justice, WBAI in New York City. I'm also the co-host of The Collision on Thursdays at 10 a.m. where sports and politics collide. So it is wonderful to be here and to shine light on what's going on in D.C. We have a couple of wonderful guests who you may be aware of. You may be aware of. We have Frankie Sebron from Harriet's Wildest Dreams, one of my favorite organizations. You probably know about them. You've heard about them on PPL D.C. You've heard about them, The Collision. You've heard about them all across WPFW. And look at the work and the resistance and the protests that have been going on in the last week related to the D.C. occupation, and get updates regarding that. And at the bottom of the hour, we have Hazami Barmada. And if you're following the Free Palestine movement in D.C., then I know you probably know about Hazami, who has been really a part of multiple encampments, media encampments, encampments at the Israeli embassy. And Hazami will tell us, you know, why we need to sound the alarm even more specifically around September 22nd. So here at WPFW, we are against occupation in all forms. And before we get to that, I have to cover somebody just for a few minutes. Want to get it out of the way. Charlie Kirk. I really don't want to spend a lot of time on Charlie Kirk. Don't want to spend a lot of breath on Charlie Kirk. But we have to. We have to. And we have to for a couple of reasons. But not the least that the Charlie Kirk story, which I think people know about, that Charlie Kirk was murdered last week. The right-wing bigoted commentator was murdered last week. Many people have saw the video. But when you have a president who says, well, immediately, we're going to go after quote-unquote leftist organizations, we're going to go after the left before we even know who the shooter is, that's problematic. And that affects all protesters everywhere, including in Washington, D.C., when Stephen Miller echoes the same thing, when bills are starting to be pushed to harm individuals and organizations who are fighting for human rights and social justice, that we have to talk about it. So I'm just going to say a couple of words about Charlie Kirk. You know, people say they saw the video and the video is gruesome, and it was. And yet, for the last 2 years, I have been seeing sniper videos coming through my phone almost every day. I have been seeing young people starve, children in Palestine starve to death every day. And the effect it has, I think all of us who keep seeing these videos, it's devastating. And it's devastating for two reasons. It's devastating for what I just mentioned, the visuals, the videos, the documented genocide by every single major human rights report, including Israeli human rights reports like B'Tselem and Physicians United for Israel. You have more honesty in the Israeli press. But not only for that, but for the fact that people aren't speaking up, but for the fact that the American government is subsidizing it, but for the fact there's an organization called GHF, misnamed the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which may as well be called the Gestapo Holocaust Federation. I'm comfortable saying that I'm Jewish, and I will say that I have done a lot of history around the Holocaust. I see a lot of parallels. So we have to talk about this for a minute. And we're asked to all of a sudden say, hey, you know, how do you feel about Charlie Kirk? Well, I feel that I didn't see flags at half staff for so many deserving people who should have flags at half staff, whether it is a Canada, whether it is a Yankee game. And we're asked to honor somebody who has said some many vile things. I'm not going to go down the list. Actually, we did a lot of that last week. I'm not going to go down the list of the racist things, of the homophobic things, of the anti-trans things, of the bigoted things that Charlie Kirk has said. If you want to find it, you can go Google it and you will find it. It is not that hard. But what happened was the left, quote unquote, was immediately talked about as the reason this happened, instead of a whodunit. Instead of a whodunit from jump, because if you know about Charlie Kirk, you know he was making a few different enemies. And the ones least likely to have a sniper who can hit you from 200 yards away are people on the left. I'll tell you who's more likely. It's more likely that there is a white nationalist organization, Nick Fuentes, they're called the Groypers, and a suspect was identified, Tyler Robinson. And we don't know the background of Tyler Robinson. Tyler Robinson denies it. But it remains to be seen. I see just as much evidence that he may have, he has right wing and maybe white nationalist leanings about the Groypers army. I'm not going to get into that. That might be a whole show right there. Could get into it, but not going to get into that. There's also other posts where someone said they spoke to Charlie Kirk a month ago and they put it on Twitter that he said he feared Israel would kill him. You could have a whole podcast on there. These are all speculation, but there was only one area that was talked about, and that was the left. And now they're trying to make laws on people who are fighting for human rights. But these other areas, that wasn't called speculation. Everything else was called speculation. Charlie Kirk was known to poke the bear on the Epstein files. That's going to make you some enemies too. The point is Charlie Kirk has many, many, many enemies. But you didn't hear the call from right-wing media. You didn't hear the call from the president. You didn't hear call from Stephen Miller to let's look at all these organizations. Let's look at these white supremacist organizations. Let's look at everything. That's not what happened. So Charlie Kirk becomes our business because of the threat it poses to free speech and the threat it poses to protests and the threat it poses to democracy if we are not clear about how to fight that. So that's really all I'm going to say about Charlie Kirk, because this is to heal D.C. And we want to talk about some healing in D.C. because there's been some wonderful protests going on, a whole variety. And, you know, there are few people who have been so involved in these protests as Frankie Sebron. And you probably, I know you know Frankie Sebron from past shows. Frankie, are you with us?
Hey, Chuck. I am here. Good morning. Good morning. Happy
Good
to
morning.
Be here with y'all.
I am so happy you are here because you do such good work with Harriet's Wildest Dreams, with Free DC, with planning, with court watching, with cop watching, with political education, with Know Your Rights. We recently, I saw you twice, one at the We Are All DC protest that was last Saturday, which was glorious, and then more recently at these student protests that were going on with four universities, Howard University, American University, George Washington University, and Georgetown University, all walked out in protest of the DC occupation. So I'm going to pause there and ask, how have you been and where have you been?
Yeah, thank you for that opening, Chuck. I think that right now it's so important that we understand what the opposition is, but even more important that we focus on the immediate needs of the people who are being targeted and the marginalized people in DC. You know, the goal of the empire is really to have us so scrambled and thinking about all of these different things that we don't focus on the true goal. And the goal for me, the goal for our people is liberation. And so what I've been telling folks, what I've been telling myself in the wake of the news cycle is, what is within our sphere of control? And what are the things that we can do right now on the ground to mitigate the harm that's being caused by white supremacy, by the carceral system, by patriarchal violence? What are those things that we can do? So I'll tell you a little bit about what we are doing. Today is Monday, September 15th, and that means that we're going to be outside today, Chuck, for Freedom Watch. Freedom Watch is our wraparound court and jail support. For the last, 30 days, the occupation, quote unquote, has ended on September 10th. But we had seen a huge uptick in folks who were being funneled into the carceral system, people who were being arrested. And the courts in D.C. are a statehood issue because our judges are federally appointed. The prosecutor's office who charges or brings forth charges, most of them are through the United States Attorney's Office, who papers most of the cases. And so we were seeing lockup lists, which means everybody who was arrested the day before, or everybody who MPD kidnapped, we were seeing lockup lists in the hundreds. Prior to occupation, that number was around about 40 to 60 people, but with more police, more federal agencies, with the military being on our streets, we just generally saw more people being funneled in. And so we were like, how can we catch our people? How can we get our folks? We don't leave our people to be captured by the state. And so, sorry, my dog's back there. And so we've been doing these freedom watches where we are outside of DC Superior Court. We're giving out snacks. We're giving out water. We're giving people shoelaces and inviting them to come to what's called participatory defense so that we can help them navigate if they need to come back to court. We can help them court is one of those things where it's daunting, right? If you've never been in a courtroom or if you've never been there, you just need someone there with you to go into court with you. And we're literally standing in the gap for our people as they're trying to snatch all of our folks up. Mm-hmm. And so grounding down in the work that we're already doing is so very important. But Court Watch and Freedom Watch is just one aspect of the things that we're doing. We're also getting people trained up in knowing their rights and how to film the police, because we're urging people to be good upstanders. If you see the cops, film them and do so from a place of power, right? We, the people of DC, know how to govern ourselves, and allow us to do that. And one of the ways that we can hold these folks accountable is by capturing and bearing witness. I don't know if you saw, Chuck, like there's so many videos going around of just because folks have videoed ICE, have videoed the police, yeah, it literally will disarm the police. So it's such a small thing, but a huge thing when we do it in numbers. And we're encouraging folks, there's this one-stop shop place where people can send all of their police footage, regardless of the agency. You can send it to filmthepolicedc.org, and that's in collaboration with Migrant Mutual Aid Solidarity Network, who's been holding a lot of the ICE Watch and checkpoint work for the better of the year.
Say it again. Say that address again, yes, because I know people who are listening have a pen in their hand and they're about to write this down.
Yes, it's filmthepolicedc.org. And that's where all cop videos, anytime you film them, that's where your information should go. But we're still asking folks, if there's an active checkpoint or if there's an active, you should still call the hotline, but you can find all of that information at filmthepolicedc.org.
And when you're in court, what are generally the typical charges and the typical outcomes as you sit there all day on Freedom Walk?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen people arrested for, you know, being black in the park. Right. We've seen literally they arrested four men for sitting in the park, and they had to sit in CCB overnight. We've seen people, we've seen the cops burst into people's houses without a warrant. We've seen people arrested for open container, we've seen people arrested for having weed. And we know in our city, it's decriminalized, but again, it's all these entry points and ways to pull our people, specifically Black people, into the carceral system. Their goal is to have this permanent servant class, right? And you know, there's this concerted thing of like, oh well, the police are keeping the streets safe, but how is there ever safety in a cage? How is there ever safety in prisons? It is not what really keeps society safe. We know that the most well-resourced communities are the ones that are safest. It was costing us $1 million a day. Wow. To be occupied, $1 million. And that's on top of the $1.1 billion that Congress, through our already approved budget, that Congress took from D.C. So on the front of keeping the folks safe in D.C. all the way to Congress, we're fighting on these various fronts. Because one, it's going to take all of us to get to freedom. And secondly, we need multi-layered strategies. And yeah, we're in this work for the long haul.
No, that's right. And that doesn't even include the depressed businesses. I'm talking to restaurant owners and hearing that it was dead over that month. So there's economic losses on top of it that really has to be factored into this equation. When you say multi-layered, I happen to know through speaking with you, and we've had Nini on as well, Harry as well, Dream, and there was talk about the jury nullification. I've heard that at the press conferences. Could you talk a little bit about that strategy as well?
Absolutely. So we work with folks through the jury project to get people trained up in nullifying juries. And so far this year, I think we've trained, Chuck, we do a lot of trainings. We do cop watch, yep, training, we do court watch training, we do jury training. It's really about raising the consciousness level of our folks. But I go to jury duty every single time. Like, it is not something to shy away from, because it is one.
Well, you know, people don't like jury duty, right?
So I need to
say this two or three times to hit it home so people don't get out of it because they have a role to play.
Go to jury duty. Y'all, they are literally papering every single case. And the way that we stop those wheels from turning is, one, folks need to go to jury duty. But also, if we knew that we had concerted groups of folks who were always showing up to sit on juries, we could literally break the system if we had folks going to trial instead of taking pleas. And so what jury nullification does is says, you know, you can vote not guilty because you don't agree with the charges that the government has brought before this person. You can vote not guilty on that alone. And I urge people to go to jury training and really understand that we do as residents have power, where, you know, our judges may be federally appointed, our prosecutors may be federally appointed, but this is a way that we take our power back and say, actually, no, I don't agree with the way the government is doing this. So I'm going to vote not guilty.
That's right. Because these sentences are draconian, right? And petty charges. Go ahead.
And just the sheer volume of it, about 90% of people take plea deals. And so imagine if instead of people taking those plea deals, but folks take plea deals because, you know, pretrial detention is one of those things that's loomed over people's heads. And the probable cause, the threshold for probable cause is so very low that people often think about, what is the quickest way that I can just get out of this jail cell? What is the quickest way that I can get to my freedom? But that actually works in the favor of prosecutors, because then they're able to push people into taking plea deals at a rate of 90%. So imagine if we had these juries trained up, everybody goes to trial, the system literally wouldn't be able to sustain without those plea deals. And prosecutors are the ones who get to make the terms for those.
That's right. And in many ways, and it's also using, you know, racism against young Black people in D.C. because they could cite those statistics. And we know a lot of innocent individuals are taking pleas to avoid a draconian punishment. Am I right about this?
Absolutely. But even when folks are innocent, the goal is to get out of jail as quickly as possible. So I've seen people take a plea deal to do two to five years of probation on something that they didn't do.
Yeah.
Just for the simple fact of avoiding jail time. And, you know, it's understandable, because I don't know if you know about the DC jail, but over the last, I'd say 3 years, at least 10 people have died there. And, you know, there are just so many different factors. And one, it starts with being informed. Y'all get court watch trained. Court watch training happens the last Thursday of every month. You can find the sign up for that at mobilize.us/HWD. I'll say that one more time. mobilize.us/HWD. But first, it's understanding the system, how to navigate it. And when we understand the system, then we can understand how to fight back.
That's right. I mean, that's right. You know what? I've only been in the DC jail one night, covering protests and being kettled. And what I can tell you is that was enough. Like, that was really enough to know that no human being belongs in there. And I was shackled. And the first thing I noticed is of shackled, there's no distinction of what your crime was, but it almost doesn't matter. And I was happy I was treated the way I was, because the first thing I noticed is nobody looks like me down here. Everybody's Black down here. But isn't DC half white? And, you know, I think people really have to experience what it is like and how dehumanizing it is. And just one day, and that was more than enough to get a taste. I almost want, like, every privileged person ever to have to experience what that's like in a DC jail or a Baltimore jail, because it's a problem. And it's a racist system. There's no question.
Absolutely.
It's such a racist system. Go ahead.
And And folks don't understand the human impact. We see these lockup lists and we see these numbers. Trump said himself, we've arrested 1,600 people in D.C. and now our streets are this and that. We're talking about actual human beings with lives, with families. If we want to care about people's lives and families, let's care about these folks who are being funneled into the criminal legal system. Let's care about the person who's just walking down the street and getting snatched up by MPD, ICE. Like, so there is a real human impact behind all of these numbers. And you're exactly right, Chuck. Everybody who's going before these judges, they look like me. Everybody who's being seen by a judge. So D.C. is about 47% Black. Based on our own court watch data, 90% of people who go before a judge are Black. You can't tell me that, quote unquote, Black people are committing more crime. No, this is an intentional system that is funneling our people in, and also along socio and economic lines.
That's right. It's what's happening in Anacostia isn't happening in Northwest the same way. You're not having the jump outs and all of that. I really appreciate this because you're offering concrete strategies, what people can do, what has been done beyond just protesting. Protesting is important, but where does that lead? And I was, you know, happy to see so many of these protests would end in, okay, we're doing cop watch tonight. Who's going where? How are we doing it? And there was cop watch education. So I was very excited about that. I was also excited that on this past Tuesday, and I want to cover this because I felt it was undercovered in DC and across the board. There were four universities that were protesting the occupation, starting with Georgetown, then Howard, then American, American was last, then GW, George Washington University. And then there was American. And before you go, Frankie, because I know you were there. Hey, Mike, you want to cue it up? We have a little clip to give you some sights and sounds. This is from American University.
Stand up, fight back!
Stand up, fight back! What do we do?
Stand up, fight back!
Because ultimately, the occupation of D.C. is a deliberately racist act by Trump.
Listen, go ahead.
Come on, shout out to the students, Chuck. Because you know, there's one thing, because I'm aging myself here. I am a millennial, but I have children, and raising children is a revolutionary act. And to see these babies, because they're babies to me, really stand up and say, no, we're not going to go for occupation. We're not going to go for tyranny, and we're not going to be afraid. That's some powerful, powerful stuff right there. And yeah, we spent most of that day together, really just being in student power. Historically too, like, movements are bred on college campuses, and, you know, mainstream media and other folks will have us thinking that, you know, all of Gen Z is lost to the right. No, we have students who on the left absolutely want a better world and are willing to fight and throw down for that world, a world where, you know, we care about each other, and that radical care politic is at the crux of everything. So if anything, Chuck, I'm just so proud to see students stand up and continue to be the force that we need to bring our freedom dreams to fruition.
It was so inspiring that day. I know that you were at the Howard rally, and I know that you're George Washington University rally. Were you able to have any conversations with people and talk with people and get a sense of what's happening beyond what we just spoke about?
Yeah. So I do want to let folks know that there are. So at the end of this month, September 30th, Congress will vote on the continuing resolution. There are 14 different riders on that, many of which infringe on home rule, telling us how we can spend our funds and also kind of chip away at the very limited power that we already have. And so, again, if folks are listening from across the country, we are urging you to contact your congresspeople. I know we tired of talking to them, y'all. I know we're tired, but please contact them and let them know that any of these riders that infringe on DC autonomy, we do not want. Because like our local elected officials said, we had a press conference with them, with Robert White, Janice Lewis George, and a couple of other folks. You know, DC is just the starting point. They do very much intend to send military and occupy other major cities. So we need to stop the wheels from turning now. And I will say, for other places, get your cop watch trainings up, get your court watch trainings up, make sure that you have those networks in place to be able to catch your folks. And it is possible for us to fight back. So continue to organize in your communities and care about each other.
That is, I really appreciate it. Hey, can you stay on with us?
I can, yeah.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful, because we're going to take a break. But after the break, we have Azami Barmada talking about what's going on with protests here in D.C. And I know you've been involved with the Free Palestine protests, too. So let's have a conversation together. And looking forward to after this break.
What's it do if you're approached by the police?
We deserve to be safe in our neighborhoods.
Follow these tips to assert your rights.
If you're being stopped, detained, or arrested, the best thing to say is nothing.
Stick to only these questions. Am I free to go? If stopped by law enforcement, try to leave the conversation as quickly and safely as possible.
Ask, am I free to go?
If yes, walk away calmly and quietly. Running away could give them pretext to detain you. Officers may try an insider reaction. Ignore them. Knowing your rights is a great first step.
And asserting your rights is even better.
We are here to Heal DC. Joni Eisenberg will be back next week. I cannot tell you how happy I am to have Azami Barmada with us today. If you're in D.C. and you've been covering the Free Palestine movement, then you know who Azami is. Azami could be anywhere in any encampment at any time. I'm just going to give you the D.C. local version. That encampment could be in front of the Israeli embassy. That encampment could be in front of Anthony Blinken's house last year. That encampment could be in front of the media at 400 North Capitol, the mass media who are complicit in genocide. That encampment could be anywhere. And it's not always known outside of D.C. what Azami and everyone has been doing. But we also have a situation about in a recent protest a few days ago about a call per September 22nd, which is around the corner, and the protest was to sound the alarm about September 22nd. I'm going to pause there. Azami, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me. It always sounds weird to say I'm well when we're watching a live stream genocide, but I am as humanly human as possible in this moment.
Well, you know what I've been doing when I go to protest now, I say, how are you since last month? I guess add that since last month, because none of us are doing terribly well. But there is a community in fighting back, and there is an incredible community and incredible love. And there's something to be said about that love. You know, I mean, I could go down your resume. I think you left Harvard to come protest. You were doing some things. But I think the most important thing on your resume is, I think Canary Mission found you, and is they're so bothered by you and with the work that you're doing that, while I don't want to make light of any time someone's targeted, it means that you're doing some important work. And why don't you talk about what's been really going on now, and particularly protests this week, and what's ahead of us?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that we've seen, you know, relentless activism for, you know, 2 years for a lot of people. But even before that, you know, people have been advocating for Palestinian human rights for a very long time and have been met with repression. You mentioned Canary Mission. For a long time, Zionist organizations have operated in the shadows of powerful cities around the world, doxing people who dare to say that Palestinian human rights are important to preserve. It's like they have this exceptionalism around human rights when it belongs to Palestinians. And so for anyone who's challenged that over the course of, you know, the last couple of decades, has lost their jobs, have been penalized, have been shamed, have been shunned. But what we've seen in the last 2 years is a global movement around Palestine saying that we will no longer cower to this fear. We will no longer be part of the very systems that try to silence and oppress us. And we are powerful parts of those systems. And we're willing to say that, you know, our values cannot be sidestepped anymore to preserve, you know, status and roles in cities like Washington, where, you know, systems of oppression are unfortunately operating in the shadows. And I'm just proud to say that we've spotlighted these systems, and we've been able to spotlight the power and influence of Zionism in silencing human rights advocacy around Palestine, and we've pulled it out of the shadows and into the light. And you know what happens when you pull things out of the shadows into the light? Bad things scatter in multiple directions. And so what we've been able to do is, you know, we have no illusion that we're able to directly influence policy per se, or the weapons transfers, or, you know, the horrendous things that are happening right now in Palestine to the Palestinian people by Israel, funded by American and European tax dollars. But what we do, what we are able to do, is to make it more taboo to align with such an agenda, to make it to where accountability is something we're talking about and we haven't in decades. And so, you know, we're just continuing to work to chip away at this beast that lurks in the shadows that for a very long time has contributed to the oppression and genocide against the Palestinian people.
And to your point of accountability, I think the most recent encampment, it was close to a month, and it was outside of the media headquarters on 400 North Capitol. That includes NBC, that includes Fox News, that includes Sky News, and many others. Could you talk a little about that? How are you able to hold them accountable, and some wins that happened along the way?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the moral of the story is we don't know what the right solution is, right? We don't know where the right place to pop up an encampment is. We don't know what the right place to be active is. And so what we've done as a grassroots movement is just, you know, done a little bit of everything, just trying to figure out and build pressure points around the city. And one of the things that we are known for is consistency and presence and perseverance and endurance. We have been on the streets for over 700 days in front of a lot of buildings, and you know, including, you know, AIPAC, to the Israeli embassy, to the State Department, to the White House, to little known organizations that are supporting PR and media relations for the Zionist institutions, and so on. And one thing that you know, we've really been working hard to do is to really reshape the concept of who is an activist and what pressure points matter. Most of our group is comprised of career professionals, mid-career professionals who gave up our careers to do this full time. We are comprised of people that are mothers and grandmothers that are fueled by the pain of what we are watching unfold on our screen to children that look just like mine. That is what drove me to discard my connections with my Harvard Alumni Association, all of the prestigious, you know, labels that I worked so hard to acquire, thinking that one day I will be successful enough to be able to have the power to shift the narrative on something that was deeply personal to me, which is the politicization of my own identity. And I quickly learned that that is not how change happens. And I had bought into this American dream and this concept. This is not to shit on my past, but it's rather to say I had a moment where I understood that that part of my life served me because it allowed me to understand the very systems that I can now speak very clearly and concisely about how they work. It's not just a slogan on the street. I've been in that State Department. I've been on trips to Palestine funded by the U.S. State Department, ironically under Secretary of State Blinken. So when I campaign in front of his home, it is because I know the systems within the State Department were not designed to liberate Palestine or to advocate for true human rights for Palestinians. Now, you brought about the media encampment. The reason I ended up, hitting my head against a wall trying to figure out where now, I started to understand that the ignorance of the American public, and I don't mean that to be offensive or condescending. I mean ignorance in the sense of lack of information or lack of ability to access information or lack of curiosity, because we've been socialized to not ask questions when it comes to Israel because there's consequences. And we've seen it with people losing their jobs and, you know, their families getting targeted. The perspective for me is if we could get more Americans to understand exactly what Israel's doing. We know that that worked during Vietnam when people started to see pictures of American soldiers coming out with caskets with flags draped over them, right? Things changed. We know the power of public opinion when it comes to seeing in real time Israel's atrocity, seeing IOF soldiers, you know, wearing women's lingerie and riding on the bicycles of dead children in the homes that they are occupying, that they displaced, that are, you know, in rubble and bullet holes all over the walls. That is what Americans need to see. And the media has sanitized Israel's image for a long time, which has then allowed it to operate in the shadows and normalized and in some case justified its oppression against the Palestinian people. And so what we did at the media encampment is we just stood in front of their offices, educating people. We flyered people coming in and out of the buildings and the cars of executives. And what we learned really quickly was that there are people inside these media organizations that were livid with the unfair reporting and the biased reporting that had been, brought down on them by superiors, by donors, by funders, by editors that were tied to Zionist institutions. And so we then got leaked information about what times they record, what recording studios they use, where in the building the recording studios are, and we were able to then hyper-focus sound on those shows.
Wait, I want to make sure I'm hearing you correct, because, you know, when you said livid, my first reaction was like, well, not livid enough to do anything. But I think if I'm hearing you, they're the ones, the livid ones are the ones who leaked you that information. Did I hear that right?
Yes, correct. These are people inside the media organizations that feel like they are in media because they believe in free speech, and they do not believe that the media's role is PR, and they are pissed about it. And so they leaked us information about how to disrupt the shows.
Oh, that's very interesting. So I'm going to turn to Frankie for a second, because, you know, Frank, Harris Wildest Dreams is known for what you do around D.C. in particular, but you know, you were out in front at the Free Palestine protests inside the Capitol protesting. You know, we get this question a lot. What does Palestine have to do with D.C.? Where do you see the connections? Why were you out there?
I think the question is, like, what doesn't Palestine have to do with D.C.?
Right.
You know, Occupy people everywhere. This is a collective struggle. And, you know, it crosses lines of race, class, gender, all of those things, because it really is the working class folks and the people who are, you know, we have a right just by existing. We have a right to live. We have a right to live. And so when you see injustice, wherever it is in the world, it is our duty to fight for people's freedom. And I wholeheartedly believe that we cannot be free here in D.C. until folks are free in Palestine, until folks are free in Congo, until folks are free in Sudan, until folks are free in Puerto Rico, in Cuba. Like, this is a global solidarity movement. And there is a history of Black and Palestinian solidarity. It is
talk about the history for a second.
Yeah, I mean, during the George Floyd uprisings, you could see in Palestine that they were with us. They could see the injustice that was happening here. And also, you know, our very own police officers are trained by the IOF. They are trained in the same types of tactics and surveillance. It's the same system of policing. And we've learned a lot here in DC about how to fight back against that type of oppression, and I think we will always be linked that way, because it is the people power, and it is going to take all of us to get to freedom. And I'm still in the fight with my Palestinian siblings.
Oh, I love it. And just a note, on the street everyone says IOF. For any listener who does not know what that means, what is IOF?
It is the Israeli occupation forces, not defense, because what's actually happening is offensive. What they are actually doing is genocide. And so to defend something means that there is a force that is actually causing you oppression. And that's not what's happening. They are the aggressor. Israel is the settler.
That's right. And let's be clear, that genocide has been the most documented genocide you could imagine, even without the video. Human Rights Watch, the UN, the ICC, B'Tselem, Physicians United for Israel. You literally have Israel human rights organizations calling it a genocide, but American organizations cannot. Think about that for a second. So let me pause there and Hazami ask you, because I saw video of the recent protests. You could talk about it. There was a lot of blood at this protest recently, and there was a call for a sound the alarm around September 22nd, I believe, related to Anthony Aguilar, the military veteran who was part of GHF but has been a whistleblower since. Can you talk a little bit about that protest and what we are sounding the alarm about?
Absolutely. I mean, Israel has repeatedly and openly and consistently told us of its genocidal intent and its plans to ethnically cleanse Palestine of its indigenous population. And it should come at no surprise to anybody that they've gotten full support and endorsement from U.S. politicians who are paid for by AIPAC, the Israeli lobby, to actually continue to support Israel over the will of the American people and their own constituents. That's a whole nother story. But what we are doing is our protest movement is really anchored in visual protest that is intended to inspire hearts and minds. You know, people in Palestine are not dying. They are being killed. Language matters. People in Palestine are fighting for basic fundamental human rights, even access to food and basic living things. Yet those stories aren't being told. Those narratives aren't being heard. You hear statistics, you don't hear stories. And so what our group has been doing is really trying to humanize the destruction and devastation of what's happening in Palestine by grounding it in visual protest. And so we, since, you know, 2 years on, I mean, we've been doing die-ins. We do provocative street theater reenactments where we have, you know, I dress up with a Statue of Liberty and I'm chained up and have people dressed up as IOF soldiers yanking me around town. We did that during the 4th of July on the National Mall in front of tens of thousands of people. It's intended to make people question things. It's intended to viscerally create a reaction where just standing there chanting doesn't create that same connection point. So the blood, you know, we call it blood dumps. It's simply red dye. And the reason I have to mention that is it's the subject of several lawsuits, and is part of several you know, lawsuits. It is literally water mixed with food coloring, the very food coloring that you consume in almost everything that you eat. So it is safe and it's not biohazardous, and it's safe, and animals and humans can consume it. Now, the idea of the visualization of blood pouring down the streets is we've managed to figure out how to you know, mix it to where it literally looks like blood. And so our protests, we dump gallons of this on public roads. And that week that we are referring to, we were in front of the home of the U.S. Vice President J.P. Vance, and which is directly across the street from the embassy, British embassy in Washington. And, you know, we're talking about this final solution to Gaza and sounding the alarms. Anthony Aguilera, a U.S. Colonel, Lieutenant Colonel, left the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation concentration camps and sounded the alarms, telling people what Israel was doing with using food as a weapon of war to lure starving people into concentration camps and to force them to abandon their homes. And then we've also learned from Anthony Aguilar that people were intentionally shot while retrieving food, and people that went to go retrieve the bodies of people that were shot were also shot in what appears to be some type of sick, perverted hunger games designed and paid for by the United States. And I say designed because the companies behind the GHF that are working on behalf of the Israeli, barbaric Israeli institutions are U.S. They're Boston Consulting Group. They are Orbis Operations, registered in McLean, Virginia. They are people like Johnny Moore, who live down the street. Ooh. These are people that literally operate in our communities and our societies. And the whistleblower, Anthony Aguilar, sounded the alarm, saying that the concentration camps were happening. Here's Israel's intent. And it was ignored. And so what we are doing is a global campaign that is launching, dovetailing with the flotilla that is currently sailing towards Gaza to challenge the illegal occupation and siege of Gaza by Israel. We are mobilizing a groundswell, a storm of waves of activations around sound the alarm to make sure that the alarms are deafening and that our screams do not stop and are relentless to let people know what Israel is doing.
I really appreciate that. I have to add something. I was at the People's Conference for Palestine, as you were as well, and I spoke to Anthony Aguilar at length, and he spoke about Johnny Moore, and I said, did you know that Palestinian Youth Movement and others are protesting at the homes of GHF officials, including Johnny Moore? And he said, yes, they're war criminals, and they should keep on doing that. And he went down the list and saying everyone's a war criminal. And I asked him a question about Johnny Moore, and particularly as a lead figure, because my assumption was that maybe he's just doing it for money. And what he told me was, well, no, he's actually a millionaire already. He doesn't need money. He is a Christian Zionist who is invested in a very religious way to be on the head. And that, like, frightened me even more, that the people who are in charge of giving aid, and we don't have time to go deep into, you know, Christian Zionism right now, are the people who actually want to start Armageddon, whatever, rapture, whatever you want to call it. And it's some very scary stuff. So we have to keep on protesting. I'm going to ask this last question to both you and Frankie. People listening, they always say, how can I get involved? How can I get tapped in? How can it be part of the solution?
Yeah, I can go. So if you are a DC resident, get involved with Free DC. We are literally fighting to protect home rule in places where our local leadership is not doing the thing. We are doing the thing. We are organizing safe passage walks for students in the morning time, noise demonstrations in the evening, making trips to Congress. If you are across the country, please contact your Congress members. You can find all this information at freedcproject.org to get tapped in. If you want to get tapped in with the local work we're doing here at Harriet's Wildest Dreams, that's the Cop Watch, the Court Watch, the Jury Project. You can go to mobilize.us/HWD. And if you see the police, film the police. It is your constitutional right to do so. If the police, if they approach you, know your rights. The first question you always ask is, am I free to go? And you walk away. Submit all of your videos to filmthepolicedc.org, y'all. It's going to take all of us to get to freedom.
It's going to take all of us. Hazami.
Yeah, I think I just want to acknowledge also the amazing work happening on the streets of D.C. And groups that are mobilizing on so many causes. I mean, there's just the situation in our world is terrifying. But I think one thing we've all learned, you know, over the last, you know, decade is power of the people. People have power and we've been giving it away for far too long. And the way to get your power back is to organize and mobilize and don't give it away. Like, let's stop acquiescing to the systems and then complaining about the systems when we are part of the system. And so that's kind of why I think, you know, my biggest call to action would be to educate yourself, to look in the mirror and ask yourself, what am I willing to do to make myself a tiny bit more uncomfortable in order to create change? Because discomfort is what causes change. No oppressor ever, you know, rationally gave people that they were oppressing their freedom by simply being asked nicely to do so. But that requires people willing to take risks. It requires hundreds of Frankies and hundreds of Chucks and hundreds of Hazamis, and everyone has that power inside of them. It's just the question is, do you have the will? Do you have the desire? Are you willing to take the risk? And risks should be assessed by everybody based on their own comfort level. I will say with our group, one of the things I'm passionate about is making change and protest accessible. We do follow the rules. And the reason I want to say that we do, it's not because we agree with them. It's because the thing the media wants the most is the picture of a brown, angry Muslim woman. And I will not give them that damn picture. I will give them the picture of a sophisticated professional activist who is a mother and a community member who is livid with my tax dollars funding a genocide. And I'm not willing to be pictured necessarily getting arrested, because that's literally, we've had media tell us the only way we'll cover your protests is if you get arrested. So you know what we did? We showed up at the media agencies and blasted their studios with sirens to where they had to cover us because their audiences were listening to us online on their live stream. So find ways to be heard and don't be a pawn of the very system that wants to scapegoat us and portray us as inhumane. We are human. We are livid because we are human. We are feeling the rage. And so a way to connect is just, I've been posting a lot of stuff on my own personal page at Hazami. So it's just at on Instagram, Hazami. And again, I know we're running out of time, but I will say, you know, why we don't organize under a group name is protest laws look very different when you're an individual versus when you're an organization. So there is some strategic power to being a group of friends that is out on the side of a street, because you don't have to have permits the way you do if you're an organized organization. And there's multiple different, you know, things at play here, which I'm happy to unpack, or if anyone's interested, you can reach out to me. But there are reasons and ways to do things.
Okay. Well, listen, Hazami, Frankie, I'm amped up. I'm excited. And I'm sure listeners are amped up as well. This is the inspiration that many need. Thank you so much, both of you. I just want an announcement. Joni hopes to be back next Monday to do a show in tribute to recent ancestor revolutionary D.C. activists from Panama, Arturo Griffiths, a longtime fighter for D.C. statehood, founder of D.C. Workers United, and much, much more. So look forward to coming back in D.C. and hearing from Arturo and Joni. Thank you, everybody.
Hi, this is Jim Byers, host of the Latin Flavor Classic Edition. Support from listeners like you are the tools that have built WPFW over nearly 5 decades. We provide news, music worth listening to, and in-depth conversations about your community and the world. One of the many ways that you could contribute is to donate a vehicle that you no longer need, running or not. It can do wonders for WPFW, so donate it for a tax break for 2024. Go to WPFWFM.org. or call 1-866-WPFW-CAR. That's 1-866-973-9227 for more information. Help WPFW continue building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
The United Black Community presents the 21st Annual Love Supreme, a musical, poetic birthday tribute to another Ruth, John Coltrane, featuring the Nasa Abadie Quintet, Cindy Brown, Kenny Carroll, Nana Malaya, and more on Friday, September 19th, 2025 at 7 p.m. at E-Life Restaurant, 9033 Central Avenue, Capitol Heights, Maryland. Details, ubcanddc@yahoo.com, 240-832-7203. Thank you.
WPFW presents Genius plus Soul equals Ray and John. Tuesday, September 23rd, 5 a.m. until midnight. This will be a fundraising birthday tribute like no other, illuminating the lives and contributions of Ray Charles and John Coltrane, two icons of American music. Schedule and details at WPFWFM